7 minutes.
I can do that. My name is Bob, and I'm an addict and an alcoholic.
Hey, Bob. Hey, Bob.
Yes, I blew through the red light on the way here. This year, I heard something said that if you're at a red light on a motorcycle more than 45 seconds, you can go through. So I can't count very good, so when I see it, I go. So, I first of all want to thank Danny for an excellent lead into this. And I say today that I have an overwhelming amount of respect for any vet that we have in this country, which goes along with an appreciation for life, which I certainly didn't have when I walked through these doors. You know, this morning I got on my knees and I prayed. I prayed to share a good message. I should have prayed on my clothing, because I spent a half hour going back and forth with what I was going to wear. Oh, boy. Probably going to regret admitting that, but it is what it is. It kept me away from being nervous all the way up here, and then I seen the pillow, and I go, oh, my God. And then, of course, my pal Randy's helping me out, too. So I'd like to tell you I'm not nervous, but everybody's nervous. So it is what it is. You know, when I think back on things now, and certainly there's much more clarity than there ever was before I came through the door. I think my first memory of alcohol, and it was alcohol, I was 7 or 8 years old. And my parents, you know, we all celebrated on New Year's Eve. And I got probably a glass that's the size of 2 shots of beer. I could pick between beer or champagne. And I went for the beer. I don't know why, but I went for it. And I remember to this day yet how that felt going down my throat. And I mean, again, when I think today, I think, you know, if you're not an alcoholic, can you remember the first time you ever drank anything? I can remember that effect even back then. It was a long time from that to the next events, but through this, I knew that certainly the disease of alcoholism and drug addiction was in me. My life was far from being normal. I was far from being normal, and I was a thief. But inside, I never belonged anywhere. I never fit anywhere. I never really got into much trouble until I got into my teenage years. And again, the getting into the trouble in the beginning had nothing to do with it. I wasn't using anything at that point. But, you know, you're growing and opinions. Boy, I was opinionated. I was always opinionated. And I can remember, you know, I had two best friends. We were like the three amigos, or the three stooges. And here we were, you know, we'd go into the store and we were ripping off candy bars. And then I can remember going over to my one buddy's house. And we walked in the house and he was sitting on the couch. His brother was sitting on the couch with his mom. And they were smoking pot. And, you know, even back then I knew they were losers. Because I would never do that, you know. We were much better than that, and of course, after that, we walked out of there, and we went back to stealing. But we weren't the losers that were smoking pot. So, in my mind, the mind is continually working with this disease. At least for me, it was, and I could justify anything I was doing while I was critiquing anything that you were doing. And I remember, you know, when I was 13, I was pulling some bushes out of the house. Had to back my dad's Suburban up and put chains on it. And of course, you know, at 13, you think you know everything, but you don't know anything. I didn't need the backup mirrors because I just kept the door open and stuck my head out the back. So the door caught on the basketball pole and bent it. Then I couldn't shut it. I did get the bushes pulled out. But, you know, My dad was practicing alcoholic at the time. There was a lot of dysfunction in it. He was, you know, physical. It was kind of the typical alcoholic family. So I thought, man, I am not going inside and telling him that because he'll beat my ass. So I just closed it as good as I could. Man, I crawled in my bed. I went to, I don't even know how I got to sleep, but I did. The next morning, my dad decides he's going to take my brother and I to church. And, of course, when he grabs the handle, what the, you know, what is going on? And, of course, he accuses my brother right away, and I'm not seeing anything, because as long as it ain't my ass getting beat, I'm okay. And so, needless to say, this whole thing it didn't take long. He knew that I did it, but I wouldn't say anything. And again, this is the disease working inside of me, because he asked me, I told him no. He asked me again. I thought, there's no way I'm telling, because he's going to beat my ass. And back then, when I think of this now, it's, you know, the truth. The truth is so powerful. A commonly used statement I'll say today, if I think somebody's lying to me, is that it's not important that I believe what you're saying. It's much more important if you believe what you're saying. Because when I went through this with my dad did probably the best thing he ever did in my life. Instead of doing anything, he just said, well, you're grounded until you decide to tell me the truth. And when he'd see me, he'd ask me. This went on for like 2 weeks. I told the lie so many times that I didn't do it, that at the end of the 2 weeks, I didn't want to be grounded anymore. So I told him that I did it so that I could get ungrounded. But that is the disease working inside of me, because at the end of that 2 weeks, I had told that lie so many times that I believed that I really didn't do it. So when I told him that I did it, I believed that I was lying so that I could get out of there. And this, again, is the disease. And what did I learn? This was 13 years old. I learned that I should never tell the same lie twice. Then I would be okay. That's where my normal was, and things went on. You know, I was a runt in school. I didn't do anything other than stealing up until the time I was 15. In 15, I was raised strict Catholic. I went through a Catholic elementary school. I was the only kid of three that was going to Catholic high school because I had the brains. Or so they thought. So I'm in Catholic Memorial a year and a half. Actually, it wasn't even a year and a half. It was homecoming of 10th grade. And at that point, you know, in 9th grade, I weighed 99 pounds. I had to lose a pound to wrestle in the class, so I was 98 pounds. Beginning of 10th grade, I was probably, I don't know, maybe 102. And back then, you know, things were a lot different. Peer pressure, which is still very meaningful today, I'm certain, was even more meaningful back then, I think, because there was a lot of tolerance for bullying. There was a lot of tolerance for everything, name-calling, I mean, you name it. I got picked on a lot through school, and in high school, there was this guy twice my size was going to pound on me. I don't know why he was going to pound on me, but he was going to, and I was doing everything I could to avoid this guy. And I only had one friend. And at that point, I can remember going to homecoming, and I'm standing in a parking lot with a group of my buddy's friends. I only know my buddy. I mean, I know who they are, but he's my only friend. And all of a sudden, here comes this big guy. And I'm thinking, this is, I got nowhere to go. This guy is going to pound on me. And so he's walking up, and he sees me and gives me that look. And then he looks at my buddy that's standing next to me, and he shakes his hand because they knew each other. And he says, I didn't know. He's a freak, isn't he? And I thought, oh, man, the guy's going to call me names, and then he's going to pound the hell out of me. I didn't know what that meant. I just thought it was a name. And, of course, you know, it didn't. That night, I got all kinds of information. So, you know, pot smokers were the freaks. You had the freaks, the jocks, and the geeks. So now I was no longer a geek that was getting picked on. Now I was cool. This guy shook my hand and told me he was sorry for giving me a hard time. That I was all right. It was the first time in my life that I felt accepted. I didn't know what that was going to lead to, but I didn't even care. And that really was what set everything in. That didn't make me an alcoholic. That didn't make me an addict. That just made me a diseased person that was, boy, going to from, you know, 0 to 60 in 4 seconds. Because that was, I think that was in the first month or two of the semester. By the end of that semester, I was thrown out of that high school. I got in enough trouble that I was thrown out of that high school. I picked a fight with a guy that was a lifetime friend because he was a jock and I was a freak. And that was cool back then. And I would do whatever it took to keep that facade going because I finally belonged. And belonging was more important than anything. So I was selling everything inside of myself because I just wanted to fit in with these people. So, you know, from that point on, boy, I went through, probably been to 5 high schools. And, I mean, spiraling down. And back then, you know, when I was 15, and you got into trouble, and of course I'm running away from home, they didn't know what to do if you were in trouble, so they put you on a psych ward. So I went to 5th floor in Waukesha Memorial because they didn't have treatment facilities then. And they didn't separate adults and kids. They had everybody together. So I'm up there, and when I look back on that now, I say, you know, I'll bet you 90% of them people were addicts or alcoholics or both. So I got up there. I went through 6 weeks guy hung himself while I was up there. I remember another guy running down the hall, slitting his wrist, and I just thought, man, life in itself is screwed up. Everything is screwed up. At that point, I kind of knew that, I don't know why, but I thought I'll live to be about 20 years old. And again, this is the disease form and everything that's going on and adapting in ways that weren't good to adapt, but I was just spiraling down so fast to it was hard to really keep track of or control of anything. I remember a long time ago now listening to Tony D speak at Friday nights at the convention on Friday night. And when I think about all this usage, I always go back to thinking what he said in the beginning, because he said, you know, people always ask me, what's your drug of choice? And he said, whatever you got. And that's how I was, whatever you got. I didn't care what it was, as long as I could get it, as long as I could take it. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it was going to do. I didn't care. And it was really quickly that I didn't care about living or dying or anything. When I think back, the first time I tried to commit suicide, because that's where I was sure that I belonged. I was probably 18 or 19 years old, and boy, people said different things about me, and the thing I would say to them is, this is my life. It's none of your damn business. I can do whatever I want to do. And that was my philosophy, and that would come back to haunt me many times. I remember the parents saying, wait till you have kids, and that will come back to haunt you. But back then, that's where I was. When I OD'd, my best friend picked me up and carried me to his house. My ma had called health professionals, and they said at the time and point he's at, there's nothing they can do. They're going to observe his body, and either he's going to come out of it or he ain't. So my best friend babysat me for 3 days until I came out of it, and I guess when I came out of it, him and I got into fisticuffs. I don't remember anything for about a week, maybe even longer than that. And And that even back then, you know, when I got out of that, do you think there'd be any thought that there might be something better out there? It just wasn't. When I go back to being on the fifth floor, at any time in that period, did they ever hit on drugs or alcohol? Never. And there was just a lot of ignorance with it, as well as I was with everything else. And boy, with all of that. And I think that, you know, drinking was short-lived and long-lived, because I relied on drinking for a very short period of time because I knew drinking wouldn't do it for me. But that was the great thing about drugs. All drugs. Anything that I took with drugs enabled me to drink more. So all of a sudden, drinking was cool then, because I was using, I could drink more. So, you know, this would go on again. This all, you know, at 15 years old, I went from being, you know, I might have been on the honor roll in ninth grade. In 10th grade, I'm thrown out. Before the end of 10th grade, I'm sitting in jail as a kid. I'm facing 5 felonies, amongst other legal trouble. I mean, everything in the world is just spiraling out of control. And of course, I'm not too concerned with it, because I know I'm going to die. And of course, I know I'm certain I'm going to die at my own hands. And, you know, when you're feeling like a failure and you try to commit suicide and you fail at that, things aren't going in a good direction, and you know that nothing really is working out. But again, you know, my life was full of negativity, and I knew everything. And Danny was talking about when he was in trouble. You know, when I was in trouble, I had that choice to go in the Marines. I filled out all this paperwork, and then I got into court with my attorney, and you know, I was a piece of shit punk back then. I said to my attorney, no, I choose to be a lifetime felon. I don't need to go into the service. What do they know? So I'm a lifetime felon, because I was smart when I was 18 years old and made good decisions. I don't know if the service would have been good for me, but the option was there. And again, that's the disease, not working in good ways. I think, you know, the other thing I was thinking about this morning is yet... and through the grace of God, go I. Because I always keep in mind yet. Because if you hear me and you think, you know, I never did anything that bad, remember yet. Because I remember yet. When I'm listening to a speaker, it doesn't matter whether his story is worse than mine or not as bad as mine, however I interpret it to be. I know today, if I don't stay here and I go back out there, there's nothing in the world I won't do to keep that disease going. Yet it'll happen. The worst thing in the world that you ever heard of anybody doing, I know I can do if I go back out there. I don't care about anything when I'm out there or anybody, and I'll steal from anybody to keep this crap going. When I was 18 years old, this best friend that carried me home and watched my body and pinched me every 20 minutes, because that's what they told him to do. I'm downtown Milwaukee on 27th and something with him, helping his folks paint something. And we're packing everything up, and I'm coming around the front of the building with a ladder, and I see on the dash of his mom's car, she laid her engagement ring. Of course, it's a diamond. And so what do you think I did? Oh, man, that's a perfect opportunity. Do you think I would care if this was my best friend and this was his mom? Nope, I reached in there, I put that in my pocket. I knew where I was going later. That's how I was. That's when I say that I was, you know, a piece of crap person, I didn't care about anything or anyone. And I, that night, and of course, you know, his mom noticed it when she was going in, and of course I just lied, because that's what I did. And I ended up at 24th and Cherry Nut, a beautiful part of Milwaukee, about, you know, 30-some years ago. And I went down there with this other guy, and we met this other guy going down to the bar. We're going to get rid of this for some synthetic heroin. And again, there's nowhere that I wouldn't go to. It didn't matter how bad it was. It wasn't because I was that bad. It was that I didn't care. I didn't care what happened. And I remember going down there and let this other guy handle it. And ironically, we got ripped off. So we go back to this guy's house and realize that instead of having, you know, a couple $100 worth of synthetic heroin, we had probably about $20 or $30 worth of the blues, which was 10 Valium. And, I mean, how, you know, talk about karma and how things come around. And I remember going back to that house and the guy that owned the house or rented a house or whatever, he says, well, I'm going to try some of that. So he's cooking that up and he's strapping his arm and he's shooting stuff in. And I thought at that point, I hated needles. I couldn't stand needles. And I thought to myself, man, I would never do that. There's so many things I would never do. And I just remember that sometimes like it was yesterday. And certainly, again, back then I wasn't aware of knowing yet. Today I know yet. Because, again, I know if I go out there, I'll stick a needle anywhere I need to. I'll stick anything else anywhere I need to. No matter what I thought back then about I won't do that or I won't do this, it's going to happen. So the nice part about that is, and I know I'm doing some skipping around, but last year I got my taxes back, and you know, that was 30 years ago. And you know, some things you never forget, no matter how bad your memory is. When you get older, memory, they say, is the first thing to go, but there's some things you don't ever forget. So I got my taxes back and I knew it was time. And back then I remembered his mom saying that the insurance company gave him $1,300 for that, for the rings, so she was able to go get some other ones. But of course it ain't the same, but I always remembered that. So when I got my taxes back last year, I sat down with my best friend, and that was the first time I was honest with my best friend. And I sat down with his mother and gave her $1,300 and made an amends. I'd have never done there's a lot of things I'd never done, but that just speaks volumes to how much change can happen if you stick around. The miracle is in every one of us. But if I wouldn't have stuck around, and in the beginning you couldn't tell me, you couldn't tell me anything. I knew that I knew everything. And I ended up, and I guess one would say that was my last moment of clarity, and all the trouble I got into, and prison being on the edge of everything, my last suicide was October attempt was October 27th of 1984. That'd be about 10:30 at night. I drove my car through downtown Waukesha and into the gazebo at probably about what I think was about 100 miles an hour. It really doesn't matter what the speed was. There's a lot of things that don't matter, but it ripped the body off the frame. I joked earlier in my life that I was going to do that, but of course, to me, there's always two kinds of people when it comes to suicide. There are the people that want to commit suicide and the people that want help. And the people that want help typically talk about it, and the people that are serious about it do it. It doesn't mean that anyone can't end up doing it, but that's what I did, and I never said anything around people that I knew would take me seriously. So I drove my car into that, and of course I thought that, you know, I could do that and get the last laugh, because I thought I can take that thing down and I end my life at the same time. And of course the police were just hassling me. Everybody was hassling me. The judges, the police, my parents, probation agent, the jailers, everybody. Life was unfair. So here I'm going to cruise down there, take that out, end my life. And, that didn't happen. I wasn't sober any day of the week. And at that time, I I had to go in every week for urine tests. And so I learned, again, that's just part of the disease. I learned what I could get away with and what I couldn't get away with. So I would drink a cup of vinegar and 2 gallons of water every day before I went in by my POs. And at the same time, you know, I don't have a problem. It's just they're causing me to do this and that. And I did, boy, I did that for a long time. But I got through that. It did not take my life. I got put in jail. And I remember the judge, in the midst of that hearing, and that was when I had the opportunity to get through life without a felony also, the judge is asking me if I'm satisfied with my representation. He's reading out of a book. He says, fleeing, at that point it was, I was just getting sentenced on the fleeing an officer and a criminal damages to property. He said, I can give you 1 year and a $2,450 fine and take your license for a year, and if this book allowed me to do more, I would. And that was, so that was the beginning. Well, that led to the moment of clarity, but that still wasn't the moment of clarity, because then I got locked up and I got Huber privileges. And again, when I go back to, you know, not yet, eventually, you know, I'm coming into Huber and I'm sticking drugs up my anal cavity to get into Huber so that I can keep my disease going. And again, you know, if you told me at 15, when I'm talking to my buddy about his loser brother that smokes pot, that I would be doing this down the road, and much worse, I would have said no. But, you know, everything does eventually catch up with you, and I was going in and out and getting searched, and they found my stash. So that was, I knew I was getting locked up. I got questioned by the detectives, and I just said to them, you know, there isn't anything that matters. This is the first time in my life I know where I'm going, I know what I did, and there's nothing I can do. And I got locked up in the main jail then, and really that was the moment of clarity. Every time I got locked up, I got on my knees and prayed. And the next day when I get out, I go back to doing what I was doing. I never recognized that any prayers were answered, and then I'd get locked up again and do it. And this was the first time I got locked up and didn't pray to get out. In the first place, I knew I wasn't going to get out, but what I prayed for was for some help. Because I knew that at that point I had a 10-year prison sentence. I didn't want to go the way that I was going, because I knew that I would get much worse if I didn't get help before. So that's what I prayed for, help. And I met with my PO. I told my PO the same thing. I met with an AODA counselor that helped save my life to this day yet. And I said the same thing to him. I said, I just want to get some help. If I don't get any help before I go to prison, I know things are going to get much worse. So that was my, really, the moment of clarity in knowing that there had to be something else out there. And I needed it badly. So, ironically, and prayers are answered. All my prayers have always been answered. I just didn't always know that. I just didn't, because it wasn't the answer that I wanted. And still today, not but today, I realize that everything is answered. It's answered the way that it's supposed to. So I got into treatment. I was fortunate back then because treatment back then was 30 days. Man, there was a ton of people around. I had an opportunity to go to a halfway house. And I ended up in Exodus House. And, of course, you know, there was still, a whole lot of stubbornness and opinions. I almost got in a fisticuffs with a guy in treatment. We were arguing what was better, Hondas or Harleys. So, and in treatment too, I had another big guy. He was, I don't know, probably 6'5", 6'7". I don't know. He was a big guy. Him and I would argue. I was still, you know, there was a lot of screwed upness and again, opinions, and nobody was going to tell me what to do. You know, I was, boy, grabbing onto everything on my way in because I wanted things to get better. I just didn't want to change too much. So, you know, a lot of seeds were being planted, and I needed a lot of seeds to be planted. And I was really fortunate because not only did I have the option of the 30 days, you know, there were so many people around at the time that were getting together and doing fun stuff. I just met a newcomer yesterday at a meeting, and they were saying that they don't know what they're going to do with all their time because everything they did around using. They're going to be so bored. And I said, you know, you are not going to be bored. You have no idea. I had no idea. I had the same thought back then, too, that what am I going to do and how am I going to proceed with life when you go from, you know, using in the beginning, which might be, you know, once a week, it might be every couple of days, and in the end, it's every single day, it's every single hour. I couldn't survive 20 minutes without something. It didn't matter what it was, it had to be something. So it took a long time. It took a lot of old-timers in the beginning, and I got out of treatment, I got out of that halfway house, I started going to meetings. You work through your fifth step in treatment, and I was off and running. And I started going to meetings. Boy, they say 90 and 90, and I probably hit 200 meetings in 90 days. But my problem was still me, and I didn't realize that. So I come into the meetings. Now I went through that fifth step. I don't need a sponsor. I'm an alcoholic and an addict, and I can help you because you are certainly sicker than I am. And in my mind, I believed that. So I spent a lot of time. I spent a lot of years coming in and out and in and out because I wouldn't grasp onto a lot of things. And honesty was still, even though I would not lie the same lie more than once, things were so screwed up in my life, and appreciation and gratitude and respect, and there were a lot of things that really weren't there, and women. I never had women issues until I got into recovery because I didn't care. Now I got into recovery and that was just another thing. It wasn't the women, it was me, but it was just another thing that I was veering off on that kept me from becoming a better person, from becoming a person. So, you know, I spent 13 years in and out and in and out and dating, and boy oh boy, I have shivers that run down my spine when I think about some of the things that I said for advice back then to other people. And I think about how much patience and tolerance the old timers had and still have today. I don't know if I will ever have that patience and tolerance, but that patience and tolerance kept me around. It did eventually sink in and allowed me to become a better person and be definitely more patient and tolerant and even in recovery, in early recovery, when I wasn't so recovered and when I wasn't so, I certainly like to think that I'm much more healthy now, but I still have amends to make from being in early recovery. But it gets better, and I become better, and I finally got a sponsor. And I finally learned the importance of being honest all of the time. Then I don't have to worry about the one lie or the two lies or any lies. and listen to them and realize that I don't have all the answers. I never had all the answers. And I thought that life was picking on me, that life was so unfair. Well, you know, imagine the idea that life is not fair. It has nothing to do with me. Sometimes it isn't. Life is good sometimes. Sometimes it isn't. It's the way that it goes. I just couldn't accept that. I couldn't grasp that. I couldn't live life on life's terms because I thought that my life was so bad. In early recovery, I didn't hear a lot of God talk, and I was really happy about that because when I had nobody else left to blame for all the problems that were going on in my life, I blamed God. So it was really good for me to be able to come in and know that it was okay for me not to be grasping onto that. I listened to Dave Essay speak years ago and talk about the importance of that. I was in a better place at that, and I remember him saying that, you know, in the beginning you can have the doorknob or the telephone pole or the group. You can have anything that works for you, which I really needed to hear. But then he said, at some time and point, if you want what we have, you have to grasp onto something stronger, because the doorknob can fall off, the telephone pole can fall over, and the group can disband, and then where are you going to be? But in the beginning, I needed to have that choice. And again, this goes right back to the old timers, because old timers, if you listen to them, I couldn't listen because I didn't know how to listen with my mouth closed. And I remember an old timer saying to me that, do I get on my knees? Well, why would I get on my knees? And then he said, well, if you're not willing to get on your knees and be humble, why would you think anything out there would help you? And I thought, yeah, this guy doesn't know anything. And he said, go home and get on your knees and just pray. And again, I'm thinking, why would I do this? And he said, it doesn't matter what you believe. Just pray for help. Pray for faith. Pray for strength. Pray for anything. He said, just do it. If you do it, it will come to you. And again, I was still stubborn at that point, and I spent a lot of times trying to prove these old timers wrong. So in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm going home and I'm going to do this. And a week later, I'm coming back to tell this guy he didn't know what he was talking about. I spent a lot of time doing that, and fortunately for me, the stubbornness actually helped, because I went home and I did that. And the next day I did it again. And the next day turned into, I've been doing that for I couldn't even tell you how many years now. And I have a stronger belief than I ever had being raised the way that I was raised, because I was certain that by the time I was 13, I was damned to hell anyway. That was my interpretation. Today I don't have to have that interpretation. I can have my own. And I know that when I get down on my knees, that's the best place for me to be. I start my day out that way. It's the best way for me to start my day out. I work through these steps with the help of a sponsor, and that's the best way that I could be. And it keeps me in the right mindset. Last week I went down and visited my best friend that's still sitting in prison. I have a couple of friends that are sitting there. That's where I say, through the grace of God, go I. I have been given many opportunities. I didn't end up there. It's not because I wasn't better, that because I was better or wasn't better. It had nothing to do with it. I don't know why, but I didn't get there. I'm thankful today that I didn't get there. I hope that when my buddy gets out, that he never has to go back there again. I know that today we have that choice. When I got out of jail the last time, the thought never occurred to me that I would never be in jail again. The thought never occurred to me that I would never end up in a mental institution again or a treatment facility again. There's a lot of things that never occurred to me because of where my life was going. But that is what recovery will do. Bad things still happen, but with that foundation through my sponsor and through all of you, I can make sure that I'm doing what I should be doing today and that I'm not going to be locked up. I mean, that is a miraculous thing. It is a wonderful thing. When I walked through these doors the first time, there was a lot of sobriety here. And I had a wonderful feeling when I walked through. I knew that this would be my home group. I knew that you had what I needed. I was really thankful that the sickness, the mental sickness that I had before I came through these doors, I dealt with through the doors of AA. I was thankful that I didn't bring that baggage in here. I brought enough in. A lot of things have changed in my life unbelievably. And when I talk about bad things, they're going to happen. I know they're going to happen today. But when they happen, and the last bad thing that happened to me was January 31st, I got walked out of my job. Being in management, you're not laid off, you're terminated. You're kind of degraded, and you can't even say goodbye as you're walking out the door. You're able to go with an assistant and pack your desk and go. And that was a very hard day for me. But in the midst of that, I knew that I was going to be okay. I didn't feel good about it, but I knew I was going to be okay. And I knew what I had to do. So I got home. I had to go all the way home to make any calls because they confiscated my cell phone. And then you realize that there's that memory again. I can't remember anybody's number because everything's programmed in the phone I no longer have. So now I have to go home and try to get in touch with people without knowing any numbers. And I got to talk with my sponsor. I got to talk with some other good friends. And I hit a lot of extra meetings because that's what I do. Because that's what my foundation has taught me, that no matter what's going on, and that's not the worst thing that could happen in my life, it's just the worst thing that happened this year. And hopefully it stays that way. But again, not for a moment was there. You know, that obsession has been lifted to no work of my own. And that obsession has been lifted because I was able to grasp onto that third step, because that old timer helped to guide me, because all of you have helped to continue guide me. Today, I am not that piece of shit that walked in, you know, 30-some years ago. If I keep on the straight and narrow, my sobriety birthday now is June 14th of 98. I wish that it was June of 85, but it's not. It is what it is, and I wouldn't trade anything in the world that I have today for that. I heard a lot of drunks and addicts say many times in early recovery that, they'd be so happy and jolly, which in the first place in the beginning I thought that in itself was phony. And then they'd always be saying, you know, my worst day sober is better than my best day drunk was ever. And I thought, these guys are bigger liars than I am. But today, that's all I can tell you. You may say the same thing after I say it, but today I can tell you that getting walked out of my job is still better than the best day I ever had drinking or using anything. From the moment I walked through these doors, as was the moment I walked through the doors of AA, I felt hope immediately. I didn't know what hope was because I went through 18 years of my life not knowing what it was. If you continue to come through, it will just continue to grow, and you will truly care about people. I certainly did more than I ever did before, because I didn't give a damn about anybody, and today I do give a damn about everybody. And I give a damn about myself. I have been able to become a very good father. I have been able to become a very good grandfather. I have been able to become a very good person. and friend, and there's many things. It doesn't mean that there isn't plenty of room for me to become better, but I wouldn't even have that if it weren't for the doors to this meeting. I wouldn't even have that if it wasn't for the friendships that I have been able to build here and in other meetings. I would not have it. Everything in my life can be removed if I just quit going to meetings, because I've been there too. As a matter of fact, 98 was Harley's anniversary. That's how it ends up being 98, because I quit going to meetings, quit hanging around with the right people. I was riding around on my bike with a bunch of people that were sitting in the bar, so that's where I was sitting. And the last thing on my mind was any type of using. But I still remember that night, riding back to a buddy's house, somebody's passing around a pipe and I'm grabbing onto it. I'm not even thinking about it. It was nothing to do with what I wanted to do, but that's what happens if I cut out you. So that's why I know today. I can't. I know how important you are in my life. I know how important getting on my knees and praying and having a belief in a higher power. For me, it is God. It's really important to have any belief. I used to always think your beliefs were only good if they were my beliefs. And I am really thankful that you don't think the same way I think about everything. So I'm certain that I'm getting to a point where I'm going to start rambling, and I don't want to start rambling. I can't tell you enough that I am eternally grateful for all the opportunities that you have given me. I'm thankful that you have put up with me and helped to guide me in a better way. And know that if I owe you an amends, it hasn't left my mind. And it is something that I work on continually, because today I do strive to be a better person. And it by no means means anything about not making mistakes, but the mistakes I make today are certainly better than the mistakes I made in the past. And thank you. I'll pass.
You're getting a little. I was looking. You did last night. You did way.